Okay, today is July 21st, 1988, and I'm here with Ana Blanco at her home in, this would be Orange Park area, right, of Florida?
Yes, it's supposed to be Orange Park, because the address says Orange Park.
Okay. First of all, I need your full name.
My full name?
Right.
My full name is very long, which is my birth certificate. Okay. But the way I'm United States, no, by my citizen papers, my full name is Ana Isasi Blanco.
Okay.
Isasi is my middle name, which is my father's name, maiden name. Because my full name is Ana Maria del Carmen Isasi Valle de Blanco. That's impossible.
Okay. I understand that in the Hispanic countries, a lot of times you get the long names.
Uh-huh. My middle name is my maiden name.
Okay.
So Ana Isasi Blanco.
Okay. How is Isasi spelled?
I-S-A-S-I.
Okay. And Ana, of course, is A-N-N-A.
A-N-A. Only one A. A-N-A.
Oh, okay. Okay. And how about Blanco?
B-L-A-N-C-O.
Okay. I'm kind of interested a little bit in the name there also. The Maria, would that be a saint's name that you've gotten?
Yes, Ana. Ana is a saint's name. Ana is the Our Lady's mother, the name of our Virgin Mary.
Okay, mother. Right. That interests me, how the whole names are kind of passed
down.
Maria
like that. Was the name of Mother Jesus, and Del Carmen is one of the places where the, Our Lady appeared in Carmel.
Oh.
So it's Ana Maria del Carmen, which is too long, so when I made my citizen papers, I put Ana Isasi Blanco.
Okay, all right. Also, I need your address here, too.
6049 Antigua Court, Orange Park, Florida, 32073.
Okay, and we need your date of birth and your birthplace.
My birthplace is Havana, Cuba. The date is July 16, 1913.
Oh, you just had a birthday.
Yes. I was 75 about a few days. It's the 16th of July. I was 75 years old.
Oh, great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you don't look 75 at all.
But I feel 75.
Oh, really? Okay. I'm also interested in other places that you've lived besides Havana, Cuba, and Jacksonville here.
Okay. My father was Spanish born, so we used to travel from Cuba to Spain every 2 years to visit my father's family. And when we went, we stayed almost all summer there. So I went to Spain several times when I was a child. And in fact, I had been in school there twice because my father was staying there for business of almost a year. So I was in school in Spain, in Barcelona, in 21, something like that, in 1921. And then in the, I cannot remember exactly when I was 15 years old, no, 12 years old, it was in 28, something like that. My father also went on business in Spain. I was then in school in Madrid, Spain.
Okay.
For a year, only 1 year each time.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I finished high school in Cuba, they sent me to New Jersey to finish in school, St. Elizabeth, near Morristown. I stayed also a year, but I got sick and my parents thought I should go back home, so I didn't finish college. I just started 1 year of college.
Okay. And then you've lived in Jackson,
then
Mississippi?
Then I live in Cuba. I married Cuba. I live in Cuba, and I came. I was in school in the United States in St. Elizabeth in 1931 and 1932. Then I went back to Cuba, then married and had my child. In 1962 is when I immigrated to the United States, definitely. Meanwhile, I came almost every year to visit the United States because my father was working for an American bank. My ex-husband worked for an American pharmaceutical company. So I came once or twice a year to the United States.
Okay.
And finally, in 1962, I moved up to the United States.
Okay. And you settled in Jackson then, in 62?
No. In 62, I stayed in Miami like 2 months and was very depressed. All the Cuban refugees were there, and there was no work, very depressed. Then I have some friends that live in Jackson, Mississippi, and asked me to go there because they said, sure, you're here, we can find a job for you and school for my son, and we help you. So I moved to Jackson, Mississippi. I never thought in my life that I was, I knew Mississippi like in movies or books, but never thought I ever would live in Jackson, Mississippi. But I like it there so much, I stayed 18 years until I retired.
Okay.
When I retired in the year of Christmas of 78, my son was here in Jacksonville, and he asked me to come to live near them. I lived by myself for almost 9 years, and then I moved. They built a new house with a bigger room for me, so I moved with them.
Okay. All right, great. Okay. And I'm also interested in your occupation, what you did before you retired there.
Oh, very interesting. I didn't have really a college degree. I did a little bookkeeping because I knew how to do bookkeeping. So my big job in Mississippi was a house mother in a nursing school, in St. Dominic Hospital Nursing School. I stayed there 11 years. It was very interesting, very demanding, taking care of those girls in the dormitory. And the thing was to roll my nose, which is very strict, and it was really, you have to be very diplomatic just to have that job.
I can believe it. Yeah. Okay. I'm interested in how you got your start making lace. How did you get interested in it?
I was in school, and the old girls did lace when I was very young, and I saw them making lace. My book starts with this chapter like this.
Okay.
And I was fascinated. I couldn't even wait to grow up to be old enough for the nuns to teach me how to make lace, because they only taught lace. The girls went through all the learning embroidery stitches, and the last thing they teach you is lace. They want to be sure that you want it, because they don't lose the time teaching somebody that want it, that you have the qualities and the talent to do it, and if you are willing to do it. So I started very little things in school, but when I finished school, my mother loved lace, and she hired a tutor. And she tutored us for 10 years. She came every Wednesday, every week. We traveled a lot, but I mean in between. And we made many pieces, among them a big tablecloth. Hmm. The picture is in my book. You want to see it?
I'll take a look at it after we finish the tape here. That's fine.
And then, for me, it was fascinating, you know. Then I came to that. I'm married and have very little chance to make lace. Came to the United States. I didn't do lace at all until one day in 72, I was thinking what to give a lady, a good present that would surprise her, a person who have everything in the world. And it occurred to me that I could make a piece of lace, a little border for little doily for her. So in Mississippi, I didn't know one person who knew how to make lace. I didn't know where to get the supplies, where to get the pillow, where to get the bobbins, the threads. So I wrote my cousin in Spain to send me the supplies, and she did. And I make a little piece of lace for this lady, and everybody was very surprised in Mississippi that they could do this, because they never had seen it before. There was no one in Mississippi that knew how to make lace.
And then you just kind of kept going with that a little bit since then.
And I was invited for several art festivals and art jamborees and demonstrations. And although I never gave up my job, they want me to travel and do things. And I said, no, I need a steady job. I need something secure. So I did this in this sideline. You know, I have always my job, and I did just.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good. I would suppose that in Cuba, a lot of people were doing the lace making as you were growing up.
Very, very, very lot. Especially the people that have a lot of time to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our life in Cuba was very comfortable. We have help in the house, so you have your time. We always did volunteer works here and there, but you have to do something that not everybody, because not everybody is suitable to be glazed. You have to have a special patience, a special know how to relax, how to interpret. You know, a person who is nervous and excited and things, they cannot do it.
Mm.
Have to be a person who is very relaxed, a person who very curious, a person who likes to investigate and look. You know, have to be something. Somebody
right.
like this, but I know many people are made lace in Cuba.
Mm-hmm. What types of things would you commonly see made in lace in Cuba?
Well, they made it in for the household, like borders for your bed linens, borders for your guest towels, tablecloths, and for use you have collars, baby caps, berthas around your neckline, anything you could, it's done down by machine. This was done before by handmade lace.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that you could use now in machine lace, it had been done in handmade lace.
Right, right. Okay. Let's see. Are there any items that are real common in Cuba that wouldn't be done in other countries made from lace?
No. We are, lace is completely imported. I mean, we can make English lace, we made French lace, we made Italian lace, but nothing was original from Cuba. It's just that. And this was taught by nuns and people that that our nuns are from Spain and France.
Oh.
And from there they taught girls, and the girls grew up and became teachers. You know, that's what it is. It's just an art imported.
Imported over from Spain.
From Spain. And,
right.
But even though you could be a Spaniard, but you can make English lace because you follow the technique and you follow the methods of the English, and that it would be English lace, although you yourself are Spanish, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. You were telling me a little bit about some of the history behind lace. Can you tell me how it got its start again?
Well, lace is that everything is airy with holes they call lace. There are many types of lace. There are needle lace, crochet lace, hairpin lace. There are needleless lace, they're macrame lace, they are bobbin lace. I think you're interested about bobbin lace's history.
Right, right.
That's what, because lace is so broad.
Yeah.
That you have to concentrate in one part, I mean, to really get something out of it.
Right.
Bobbin lace is a lace in which you have to have a pillow and you have bobbins. Bobbins are the wooden stick, so it could be ivory, could be silver, could be anything, something to hold the thread and handle the thread. And what you do is weaving. You don't make no knots. Only you make a knot when a thread breaks, or you have to chase the thread, or you have to finish up something.
Hmm.
But what you're actually doing is weaving the threads.
Hmm. Okay. And you were telling me that it goes even as far back as the Egyptians.
Oh, yes. The lace, they are, in some books, you know, written books that said it, the very beginning of the laces, they found, have been found in the Egyptians' tombs with their, like, nets, you know, like something that was woven like this, you know, to cover the hair or the parts of the body. And from there, the history has been an evolution, you know. There's a different evolution for the needle lace and a different evolution for the bobbin lace. The evolution of the bobbin lace was that the threads were put in a frame, and then all the threads hang from a vertical, and then you go twisting them horizontal. And then you put a piece of woven to hold it, and then you twist another twist and put another piece of woven to hold it, and then you take out the one in the top, and then you, and you keep on doing this until you finish, until to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they thought that it could be done with simple threads hanging and weaving all the threads until from the top to the bottom, and that's what they did. And at the beginning, they called bone lace because they didn't have the bobbins made out of wood or ivory or silver. They did it with chicken bones, the rabbit thread and chicken bones, or maybe a big fish bone,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Hmm.
and then that's the very, very beginning. That's what sometimes this place is called, so Bonne, B-O-N-E, lace.
Right. It's amazing how many different types of bobbin lace there are.
Oh, they are, each country has a different, this is the Spanish, the ones I have is the Spanish bobbins, but each country have a, Danish have a different type of bobbins. The English have a different type of bobbins. The Italians have a different type of bobbins. Hmm. Each country have their own type of designs and their own type of bobbin and their own type of pillow.
Okay.
But the technique is the same.
Hmm.
Cross and twist.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit about the technique there? Can you tell me kind of what's involved in making a particular piece of lace?
Okay. The wider the lace, the most bobbin you need, the more bobbins you need, because you need a bobbin for each thread. So if it's a very narrow lace, you need fewer bobbins. If it's a wider lace, you need more bobbins. You wrap the thread on the bobbin, and then you work with the bobbins in your hand. Doesn't matter how many bobbins are in your pillow, you only have to work and worry one pair in each hand. The weaver that has to travel through the passes. The passes are the one they hang in, and they weave it, and they hang vertical. And the weaver is the one that goes across horizontal. You have to take the weaver pair and the one pair, twist, cross, so you weave the weaver pair through the two passes. Then you discard these two passes, and then you take the next two passes with the weaver. You work them together, you discard the passes what I already work on, and the weaver advances, and you work the same thing from left to right, right to left. You don't have to reverse the motion when you work the different directions.
Oh.
If you work from right to left, you twist the same way and you cross the same way. When you work from left to right, you do the same movements.
Hmm.
Always cross and twist the same way. Doesn't matter which direction you work.
Hmm. Then all your different stitches come from the different ways you do your twist and cross?
Yes, the combination of different crosses and the different twists makes the stitches.
I see.
And the combination of stitches makes the pattern of the lace.
Okay, all right. And what's exactly is the difference between cross and stitch once again? You were showing that to
okay.
me there.
You have to have one pair in each hand. To cross, you take the inside pair of the left hand over the inside pair of the right hand. So the bobbins change hands. The center bobbins change hands.
Okay.
And then you twist over the same pair without changing hands. The outside or the inside, and that's to the left.
Okay.
So the cross goes from left to right, and the twist goes from right to left. But don't change hands. They are, the bobbin stays in the same hand.
Okay.
And that's it. Then you cross again. The two insides, one over the other, changing hands, and then you twist here. You do like this. Cross like this and twist. Cross and twist.
Okay. All right, good. That's a real good explanation there. I've got a pretty good idea now, I think,
yes,
of the basics there.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I guess once you've got the real understanding of cross and twist and,
yes,
and how they're put together, then you're on
the
your...
The most important thing to understand is, and very peculiar, is it doesn't matter which direction you work. You cross the same way and you twist the same way, working from left to right, right to left. Sometimes I work, see, it works. I have to reverse the movements. You don't reverse the movements. You just follow the same movements all the time.
Okay, good. Okay, you were telling me a little bit about how you were doing your stitches and then putting the pin in.
Well, yes.
The name of that particular part is called closing around the pin?
Yes. See, you travel the weaver through the passes, and when you reach at the end of the side you want work, then you put a pin to hold the weaver. Then sometimes you have to leave there, but sometimes you have to come back. Then you cross the beam CLOS, it means that you do the same movements after the beam what you did before the beam. So you go from right to left, put a pin, then you do the same movements to come to left to right.
Okay. Okay, good.
You see, that is clear enough?
It's clear
and
to
sometimes,
me.
Sometimes you leave the pair out, but you do it with the previous pair to come back. Every time that you have to come back, you have to close the pin. It means you do the same movements that you did before so you can come back.
I see. Okay. So the pin is just kind of anchoring
the pin is just anchoring the lace, and after you work, you can take out the pins, and the lace doesn't unravel. It's woven there. The threads are woven.
Right, right. Okay, good. I noticed also that you have the paper pattern underneath your cylinder on the pillow there.
The paper pattern is where you have to follow the design.
Okay.
And this particular lace have prickets. They have already tell you the holes where you have to put the pins. When you reach there, you put the pin to come back. And you follow the pattern by the design. I mean, the design is work in a pattern, showing you where to put the pins.
Where do you get those particular patterns?
Oh, the supplies houses and wishing they have known here in Jacksonville.
Oh.
I am asking them from different California, and they imported from Belgium. And my laces, all the patterns, I have made the patterns because the free laces I made, all myself have made the patterns.
Oh, I see. So you do original patterns there for your free lace?
Huh. All the patterns in my book were my designs.
Oh, great. Great. I read in the article that your mother was a lace maker also, right?
Well, no. The particular thing about it is she liked it very much. And she learned lace with us.
Oh.
She knew how to tat, she knew how to make fillet lace, she knew how to knit, to crochet, but she didn't know how to make bobbin lace. So when the tutor came to teach us, she learned lace with us.
Oh, terrific.
She bobbin lace with us.
Okay, great.
So when I dedicated my book, I dedicated my parents, my mother that loved lace so much that she gave me the chance to learn it. And my father always was encouraging us to do it because he loved it also too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. I was wondering if you maybe had some of your mother's patterns at all or anything
like
that.
No, everything. When we left Cuba, I came only with one suit.
Okay, we were talking about some of the patterns that you've used. Do you trade patterns with other people in the lace making guild?
Oh, yes, sure, we do.
Uh-huh.
And each patterns is different for each type of lace. The torchon lace have a different pattern than the free laces.
Oh, okay.
The torchon, the straight laces, is sort like a torchon. They are more geometrical designs.
Oh, okay.
And the free laces are more floral designs, in which you make leaves, you make scrolls, you make flowers, different type of flowers. And that's the difference between. And each country have their own different type of lace.
Okay. Torchon is the same as the straight lace, right?
A straight lace. Torchon is a straight lace.
Okay.
Torchon below the category of a straight lace.
Okay. Okay, good. And that's always done on the cylinder and the pillow like that,
yes,
right?
Yes, something that the patterns in the cylinder was revolves, like, is it revolves?
Revolves, rotates.
Revolves around. You keep on going and going and taking off, going and taking off. You say, out of, whatever. And you don't know when you do a free laces, you make a flower, you turn it, you make a leaf, you turn it, you make a scroll. And it doesn't, you have to have the whole pattern done in one piece to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And here, no, you repeat the same thing over and over and over again.
Mainly with the straight lace, you would be using that for edgings on tablecloths,
yes,
or clothing or things like
clothing
that.
And all that.
Uh-huh. How would you use the free lace then? What would you combine that in?
Oh, for collars, for little doilies, for wedding veils, for baby bonnets.
Oh, I see.
You have a pattern of it, whatever you want to do, and you fill up the pattern with lace.
Oh, and that would be sewn right into the garment that you've made it
yeah,
for,
after
right?
After that, you put the collar in your garment, and you put a bertha in the garment, whatever.
Okay.
Bertha is something that's around your shoulders like this.
Oh.
Something that goes around your shoulders.
Okay. Okay, good. Let's see. I'm wondering also about how many bobbins you've used in some of the different patterns.
It depends on the width of the lace.
Mm-hmm.
because you need a bobbin for each thread that is in the lace. Mm-hmm.
You have about maybe 2 dozen bobbins there?
Yes, about that in here, uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. But you make narrow laces with less bobbins, and then you make a wider lace with more bobbins, mm-hmm. according to the width of the lace you want.
Mm-hmm. What would be about the most that you've ever used?
Oh, the most I would, 180. Could I make a front of the dress? Because from here to here, you work vertical.
Oh.
So from the shoulder to the end here was 180 bobbins.
Wow.
And then we start adding, we start here with maybe 10 bobbins, and then you're adding to go wider, once it went like this, and then when you start this way, you take off and finish it here.
Well, that would be a lot of work if you got those mixed up.
Oh, yes. That's why you don't wash the bobbins. You have to wash the threads in the pattern to see that they are in the place that you be.
I see. I noticed that when you were working the bobbins, that you weren't looking the bobbins at all. It's always watching the threads.
The threads.
Yeah. So even if, say, someone had messed up your bobbins for you, could figure out how to unravel to...
Oh, straight, yeah.
Right.
In fact, when you finish and take it off, sometimes they mess up. And when I start working, you have to straighten up the whole thing, put each thread in its own place where they belong to start working.
Right. You were telling me that if you make any mistakes at all, you have to take off exactly where you come from.
Exactly, because the wife would be a hole and it would be something distorted and would look nice. But it's something that right away you find the mistakes. You cannot go up because when you reach there again, oh my gosh, this thread shouldn't be here. So something that you right away notice your mistake and you have to undo it until you've straightened off.
Or else that'll throw your pattern off completely, right?
Completely off the pattern.
Right.
Because one thread should become this way and hold it there to come back. In the center, when I come back, it will go this way. And then the store, instead of the pattern go like this, it will go like crooked this way.
You were telling me also about the different parts of the lace. You mentioned this is distinct from like the fan shaped on this part.
Yes. See, the laces are, sometimes they have as 4 or 3 parts. You know, I have a wider thread that I'll show you the part. See, always is a more irregular design. Have the background, the trail, which is one that follows the whole design, and the scallop, which is the end. Or the fan, they call the scallop or the fan, or the fern. According to the different twists here, this part could be called the fan, the fern, or the scallop.
I see. Are there other parts of the lace, depending on the
pattern? The same thing repeated.
Oh, I see.
The border maybe have 2 trails, and then the edge, which is the fan, the fern, or the scallop.
Okay. I was also wondering if there's different names for the particular patterns. Like, would you have something showing up that would have a name to it? You mentioned like the scallops.
Well, the patterns are according to design from different countries.
Oh.
If somebody would like to put a name to the pattern, we'll call a name, but we never call the patterns by names. Some Flanders do the swan, the snowball, because they have a swan and a snowball, because in the design it's a snowball, something that looks like a snowball, and something like a swan and a rabbit, because something, you know, that, so when they have design, when they are geometrical, it's just
that's just a pattern that you'd
pattern,
see.
Yes.
I see.
With a background, with a trail, or maybe 2 trails, and then the edge, which is the part. The foot is the part that's sewn to the material.
Oh.
And the edge is the part that goes outside.
Mm-hmm. How about in the free lace? Would that have...
The free lace is a shape or something, and then you have to fill up that shape with different flowers and scrolls to do it.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. I'm going to show you when I go there, but in the table, the difference between the free lace and the straight lace.
Okay. Maybe what we could do is I could just bring some of the lace out here and we can talk to it here with the tape recorder running. You could kind of describe some of those for me. Okay, we're back after a little break where we brought some of the lace over here. And you were showing me this one particular lace that's made out of green and white thread.
To show the students that the passages are the white threads and the green thread as the weaver goes from left to right, right to left.
I see.
And it comes like a cloth. That's what they call cloth stitch, because the threads are woven like a cloth. One up and one down, one up and one down.
Okay. So the name of this particular stitch in the first inch is the cloth stitch?
Cloth stitch.
Uh-huh. Is there a name for this stitch?
The stitch is half a stitch. You do the half of the movements that you do here. And then there's only one weaver that goes across. And then the things go hang diagonal. And that shows you the other. Here were two weavers, you see? And that one weaver came to show that one thread goes diagonal and the other goes horizontal.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And that makes it for two colors so you know how to do it. I mean, you know.
That makes it a lot easier to follow the pattern.
Right away, you know you make a mistake. Because if that thread doesn't come this way, show diagonal, you know that that is a mistake.
That's fascinating, where you can see the whole thread is traveled all the way across.
That's what I did in green color, so that you can see the difference.
Yeah.
And this I did reverse. You know what I did? I changed one, could be one thread. All the things are vertical, you know, and this is, I changed the weavers. One is white and one is green. The two stitches, most principal stitches, is there's the cloth stitch and the half stitch. And these two stitches are with the two movements, done different way, the movements.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
And this is a repeat, so that people, and I make it, when I teach people, I teach that in class, I say, you go home and make me a yarn on this, all over and over again, until you really know how to handle the bobbins. Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the need to really develop a feel for the bobbins.
The bobbins, yeah. Is something, and the looseness of your hands to do it is something that is just like a type of writing. You cannot go da-da-da-da-da-da like that until you really practice a lot. Like anything, practice, practice, and practice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about some of the other ones?
Well, this is the next lesson. The other one is the next lesson. This one.
This one has the three colors in with the pink, the green, and the white.
Because here we have two weavers.
Oh.
And then meet in the center and go back. The weavers are the one that wear horizontal.
Okay.
And that's why they wear from, and then one from left to the center and right to the center. They meet in the center and they go back to the left and back to the right where they belong.
So that's a little more complicated there.
Uh-huh. If I don't do this join here correct, the pink will go this way and the green will go this way. So that's what I do it with two colors, so the students realize if they're making a mistake or not, until they really know how to read the lace. Lace never have instructions. You learn the stitches and the technique, and after that, you have a piece of lace with a picture, and then you follow and you do it. It's very, very, all these imported patterns, they don't come with explanations, just the picture of the lace, and the pricking is the pattern where you work the lace on.
Hmm. So once you've seen any particular piece of lace, you could come up with your own pattern for it and copy it, no problem.
Well, I see any particular lace and the pattern, and then I know how to work it.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Okay.
You have to have the pattern or make the pattern, which would be really hard to do it. But I mean, they always say the picture of the lace and the pattern.
Oh, I see.
And then you follow the lace, and then you have already the pattern where to put the pins.
Okay. I was wondering also, is there a name for this particular stitch?
No, this is the combination of two weavers. You know, it's just everything. Here's a twist and a cross, and everything twists and cross, but it's the only combination to make, to realize that here I have two weavers instead of one.
Okay. All right.
This could be wider, and this from here wider, from here wider. Always the weaver goes all across, come back, but here it's just halfway and halfway to show you there's two weavers in the pattern.
Okay. All right, very good.
The next lesson, the color there. That's the very first step to make lace, in which you have the foot, and you have the edge, and you have the border.
Oh.
And here, every time you change this, the weaver. See this green? Stop there, but next comes the white, and next comes the pink. going to stay there, they wait, and they go back.
Okay.
So in here, in each row, you change the weaver.
See, so it's going from being on the edge way out to into the foot.
Work into the foot. And I do that with colors so the students can realize what they're doing.
Yeah, that really
because
makes
that
it
that little thing over there, one, two, three, the fourth. That, no, no, the fourth. This one is the same thing all in white with a smaller.
Without white. Yeah.
With a smaller pricking. According to the size of the pricking, could be the same lace, bigger or smaller. It's the very same thing, but if they do like that, they make a mistake. They don't know where the mistake is. So I make them first like this so they realize how the threads travel, and then they can make it all in white.
That's a good way to teach it, because it wasn't clear to me exactly what the threads were doing, so I saw it with the colored ones.
You have to learn what the function of the threads and the work. And then after you do that, everything is easy. And that's what I'm trying to do with different colors, so they realize it's right away, they make a mistake.
Okay.
The next one here. No, not the other one. That's the same thing in white, all in white. The two weavers. They meet in the center.
That might be used on like an insert or something,
insert,
right?
Insert, an edge. This is an insert and the other is an edge.
Okay.
That's one. That's what you really start making this. Have the parts of the lace. Have the foot, the background, and the scallop.
Okay.
Scallop because the weaver goes this way, across this way. This is a fern because the weaver travels this way. Doesn't travel horizontal. Travels diagonal.
Okay.
In here, to show you that a scallop could be plain closest stitch with the teeth, closest stitch with the edge, and closest stitch with the division and edge. And you can make combination, the same thing, doing different movements there, you can make different scallops. So I teach the students all this to show them what you could do with a scallop. You look this way, or look this way, or look this way, this way. And this is the first lesson in which you are already making this, in which you have the foot, the background, and the scallop. Next. In here, you make, this is called the spider.
Okay. It looks like a spider with the little legs out there.
In here you have the foot, the spider, and the edge, which is just like a trail. You see, you have a stitch. This work like this is just like a spider.
Right.
So I teach you this because the laces have spiders, have flowers, have, you know, different things.
Okay.
And then the next here. In here, instead of scallop, is a fern. See how the weaver doesn't work horizontal, but diagonal? Like this?
Right.
One, two, three, four, five, six, the six. That's it. In here, the weaver works completely horizontal.
Oh, okay.
And here, the weaver works diagonal.
I see it.
Make like a fern.
Boy, they're getting more and more intricate there as we go along.
Okay, now all this are torch on, okay?
Okay.
But this is different type of lace. Give me the first one there. This is a torch on, a corner for a handkerchief. You can work, this is the spider, look, the scallop here, the same thing we have. Here we have the foot.
Right.
We have a design here. We have the spider with the frame. And then we have the scallop. And this is done like this. And then you turn the pillow and do it like this to make a corner without any pleating. Just, you know, when you have something straight, to make a corner, you have to bind it like this.
Right.
And this is extra, you know what I mean? This, we can do the lace in a way that match the corner already in the lace, like in here.
Oh, I see.
See?
And that's just done by turning the pillow.
That's the permanent pillow. I'm working this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, and then you start with this way, this way, this way, this way, until you come to it.
Okay.
I mean, it's so complicated, really.
Right.
The only thing that we can lace with a mattress, you know, how do you call that in English?
Oh, a mattress?
No, mattress. M-I-T-R-E, mitre.
Mitre? Mm-hmm. Mitre?
Let me look at the dictionary.
It'd be a mitre.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
See, when you
like
have a straight when you have a straight lace to make change direction, you have to mitre the corner.
Okay. Yeah, you need to kind of overlap it there.
Overlap. In here, we already the lace is when we weave the straight with the lace, we weave it with a mitre corner without no overlapping.
So you get a nice flat corner to that, right? And that's just done by kind of putting in some extra fills.
Mm-hmm. Working, when you reach here, like this, then you work on here, to here, to here, to here, to here, to here, and then you start from here, to here, to here, to here, to here, like this, until you come again to this. So you are decreasing stitches there, and then you adding stitches so again to come this, like this.
Okay. All right, good. This one next?
Well, yes, that's a type of torch on with the sign already. You see, they have the ground rod, the design. This is the torch on ground, this is a cross, you know, and this is the.
So you're actually weaving across right into the background of the lace.
Uh-huh. The threads come in and go out, you know.
Huh.
See, this thread came in here and went out this way, came in here and went out, came in here and went out this way. Also, these things are the threads coming here, and they get out in there. So the design is worked out from the threads of the background, and then they go back again to the background.
I see. Okay, good.
Well, those are the torchons. Now we come to the English lace with the box, more complicated, which are that thing there and those two there. Well, let's talk about this Spanish Puerto Rican lace.
Okay.
Not the, this black one. It's also torchon. But see, they incorporated the spider with the margarita. They call it margarita.
Oh.
It's like a little leaves.
Like a little flower.
Like a little flower. And it's made with four bodies, weaving the bodies, just like this. And this has more threads than the others because these have the foot, the background, the design, and the edge.
Okay. And that would show up in a lot of the Puerto Rican laces this, like that?
The Puerto Rico is just torchon. We've incorporated this. This belongs to beds, laces. This thing is belongs to the base. What they did, incorporated to the torchon this.
Oh, I see.
And they made their own design.
Huh.
Because the spider is for the torchon. But the spider, instead of four legs have 10 legs. You can make the five spider different.
Mm-hmm. But that's interesting to see how they came up with that new style.
The same spider, but four threads, which I'll show you later. They have one, two, three, one, four. Okay, that eight and go out eight. Instead of two and two, you can do three and go out three. You can do the spider as many legs as you want.
Okay.
But the same legs that goes to the body of the spider have to get out of the body of the spider.
Eventually they'll turn the spider into a centipede there.
That's right. And this is a fern because it's work diagonal. The edges work diagonal.
Okay.
Instead of open to the vertical.
Good.
And then that's what I have to torch on. Now we have also straight laces, the English laces, which are the box.
This one?
Yes. The background is completely different. See, the business is completely different background.
And that's more of a net type thing.
Net type thing. And of course, they have these stitches different also. You know, it's more complicated. It's much more complicated, the box English, than the torch on. The torch on is considered the most. The simpler base to do.
Mm-hmm.
although you could have many bobbies, but it's the same thing put all together, different things all put together, you know, and make a wider lace, but it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And these have more complicated stitches. Mm. But always with cross and twist, twist and cross, mm. everything. Mm. And here you have the, it's only one weaver works diagonal with three twists in between. And to be sure you're doing it right, when you reach, you work here, and when you reach here, you have to pull the weaver to know that it comes from here. Because you might drop it in the middle of the work and then makes a big hole there.
I see. You almost get a honeycomb effect with the
honeycomb,
background
yes,
there.
Honeycomb.
Oh, that's what it's called?
This stitch is called honeycomb.
That's called the honeycomb,
honeycomb.
Okay. Oh.
This particular stitch here is called the honeycomb.
I see. But that's fascinating.
And the other also can be is box. It's wider.
That's called box lace?
Box lace is English.
Okay. B-O-X? Is that how that's
no,
spelled?
No, B-U-C-K.
Oh.
Let me get that. The other book. That book. These are the English lace. Okay?
Okay. This book's the title of this book, A Manual of Handmade Bobbin Lace Work by Margaret Maidman.
Maidment.
Okay. I'll put that in my bibliography.
With a simple torchon, the cloth stitch and the half stitch. And then she had patterns of torchon, how to make, put together two things and how to cross the things, you just like that. That little thing over there, those little flowers.
These ones?
Yeah, are these things.
Okay. What are they called? Is there a name for them?
We're crossing 8 plates lead work because we call the Spanish people call margaritas because it looks like a margarita.
Okay.
Okay. Then they have more complicated. See? One with a spider, then all these are torchons. All these are torchons. Different. All these are torchons. All these are torchon laces. Different stitches, so you can learn which is different type of this. But everything is done twist and cross, cross and twist, different ways. It's a different finish. Okay, next. Okay, this is another type of lace called the cluny, which is different.
It's spelled C-L-U-N-Y.
I'm going to go to the box that you are. This is going to be. C-P-U-C-K. But the full name is called a portfolio. Box palm round. The full lace box chire, whatever it is, I don't know what is
okay.
The place where it comes from.
It's called point ground lace?
Box. They call it simply box ground.
Okay.
Box ground. Okay. They are working different angles. 45 degrees and 50 degrees, 52 degrees, you know. It's so complicated. The designs called the paper, how do you call that? The graphs come in different angles.
Oh, I see.
See, this is the honeycomb. That's what I had there. You see, the honeycomb with the
right.
Ground.
Right.
And all this is different stitches, but it's the same thing done different way. And then all this is... Give me that because I can find it really name where it comes from England.
Okay, the buck lace was made in Buckinghamshire.
Okay.
It's also called Buckingham Point lace too.
and it's the same technique, cross and twist, but different the pattern and different type of combination of crosses and stitches.
Okay.
Crosses and twists.
Okay.
Make different stitches, like the honeycomb. I can read you the name of the stitches they have there. All are different, the size of this to do. The honeycomb,
So the different names for the
different names for the different parts of the lace and different designs.
Oh, I see. And there's well over a dozen and a half there.
That's honeycomb, see? That's what I show you there.
Okay.
Twist, half a stitch, whatever, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. All these are put together. All these things put together make the lace.
I see.
Maybe you use this, this, and this in one lace. You use this, and this, and this in the other lace. You know, all this, these are different stitches, different parts, and different combination of these parts make different patterns.
I see where they have the whole stitch there, and they say that that's the same as cloth work.
Cloth stitch.
Yeah, the cloth stitch.
It's cloth stitch.
And that's a type of weaving almost.
The weaving is just like a weave.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Yes.
Good. What types of lace were common in Cuba as you were growing up? What did you see mainly?
The most of the work is the torchon and the Brussels laces, which is the three laces like this in here.
Okay.
That color. See, in this color, I have the pattern of this shape with this color, and then I fill it up with the design. I made the flower, I made the leaf, I made the scroll to fill up, because everything has no cloth. Everything is worked out on lace.
Hmm. Wow. So this is an original pattern for you?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
And this also, this one here, and this one here, and this handkerchief also. See? I have a circle, and then I did the center, and then the four. See, the patterns have to repeat, they have to be completely mirror designed. If you do this half this way, you have to do this other half the way. It's mirror.
Symmetrical.
So if you have this in this sort, then you have other in this color like this, you know. Unless it's in a circle or in a square, you have to make like a mirror image on the half and then the other half.
Mm-hmm.
Or this half like this and this half like this. When you have all shapes, you can slit off the way you want.
See,
in this here, you make this here like this, and this corner like this, and the center.
With your square piece? You keep that same symmetry?
Yes.
Both vertically as well as horizontally, and yeah. Boy, these little loops that you're doing on here, that is such fine work.
They're called picots.
Called picots?
Picots.
Uh-huh.
P-I-C-O-T-S, picots. This is the same lace that this done in a thinner thread. Okay, this has the right side and the wrong side. The straight laces are the same both sides.
Hmm.
The three laces you work in the wrong side, in which I did this flower and finish this leaf. I have no way to go, so I have to finish there and then start here and then finish there. I have no way to go, and you work by sections.
Oh, I see.
You work together as much as you can. See, this flower I did all over like this. But when something like this comes, you have to work and then you have to see. But this is the wrong side of the thread lace, and this is the right side of the lace.
Oh, that's it. Uh-huh.
The three laces have wrong side and right side. You work in the wrong side, so all the finishings are in the wrong side, the side you're working on.
Mm-hmm. How do you finish off the lace when you're doing the freestyle? How do you do that finishing?
All the borrow together and tie it. See, I bring all this thread here and tie it and make a knot there and sewing in this flower. It doesn't show anything in here. See, this flat there.
Yeah.
But in the wrong side is the end of that thing there.
That is such neat work. You'd never even tell from looking at the front. Okay, so here's the bottom side of this one, and this is the front, right? Let's see if I can get the hang of that.
Yes.
All right.
See all the finishing there? See the finishing there?
Right. That's the one that I'd seen there.
Okay. Okay. And the finishing there, the right side, you don't see anything.
Okay, good. Here's a handkerchief where you've got the edging right onto the...
The edging is just repeating the same thing, and the corner is just a little flower. It's a very simple design for the students, you know.
When you're putting this edging on, is that a drawn work here, where you're pulling...
No, it's just what they call pin stitch. It's just like you pull the thread, and it's just like a portrait. You make two stitches and pull and make like this.
Oh.
You don't, it looks like a drawn thread, but it's a pull thread.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting how the shape of the lace is being put into the shape of the handkerchief, though, too.
Yes, you have to follow the design to put it in the handkerchief, you know, like this.
How long would it take to make a handkerchief like this?
Well, that's a question everybody asks and nobody knows how to answer.
Right. That's what I kind of thought. But you've got
this
hours and hours.
This is so temperamental work. One day you can advance and work a lot. Because you are relaxed, you are, it's like a painting art. A painter can make a picture in a night, and maybe one picture will take a month and it's no good and he doesn't take it. Just for me, it's an art. One day I sit down, I can work, and do a lot. All days you do have to be make mistakes, you have to undo it, you break a thread, you won't die. But in the book says, the average width of a lace, a straight lace, which is about 1.5 inches, something like this. One design, which takes about 1.5 inches, like this, it takes at least 1 hour.
Hmm.
A very fast work. The wider is the lace, more time it takes because you have handled more bobbins.
Right. Boy.
And it's something that you cannot measure by time.
Yeah.
It's also, that's why these people don't do nowadays like a business, because it doesn't pay.
Yeah.
Because any of these pieces, you count out time, money, work. You know what I mean? Somebody an hour, $4 an hour like that.
Right.
A piece like that would go up as $200. It's going to pay $200 for that.
Right.
$350.
Right.
So lace nowadays is just a enjoyment for people to do it, not commercially.
Mm.
They handmade lace.
Mm-hmm.
And since we have the machine made lace, it's just you buy by jars. It's just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell the difference between machine made lace and handmade lace?
Uh-huh. Certainly.
What
the machine laces everything. The laces works, even flowers. It scroll all the laces you see like a loom. The threads vertical and the threads horizontal. Although the design is in a curve.
Mm.
In here, if the thread is in a curve, the thread goes in a curve. If this was the way my machine would have this shape, but all the threads would come this way.
Oh, I see.
Everything would work this way.
Uh-huh.
And here, the threads work according to the design. The threads in here goes around and come back. If the machine was working, it would look the same, but it would work all the time like this. Because the machine always where the loom is, which is have the vertical and the horizontal threads.
Yeah. So there's no way you can get that quite fineness with the machine. Yeah.
Although they are very good machine laces, which nowadays are coming back because those machines were made in England, in Switzerland, and when lace went out of fashion, they stopped making, and the machines broke, and the people find out that it could work in factories earning more money, and lace for a time was completely out of fashion, and there was no profit in it. So, but nowadays lace is again in fashion, and they are repairing those machines, and the trouble was they don't have people to know how to work those machines, and they're training people now and to do that again. For a while, during the First World War and the Second War, all this was just completely abandoned, as you would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it very common to see people wearing handmade lace, say in Cuba, when you were growing up?
In my circle of friends, yes, because they, most of them knew how to do it, and they have always a wedding, a little veil, or a wedding handkerchief, or a baby was born, you made a little cap, you know, this just always, you make like heirloom pieces.
I see. I saw in the article that they did on you that it was a tradition to give someone a handkerchief with lace on it.
Yes,
Was that mainly just for weddings?
Or? Weddings and because they take so long. I mean, it's not a common present. It's just a very special present.
Yeah, that would mean
so
a lot to someone.
For a christening, for a wedding, for somebody that is 15 years old, or maybe somebody with a 50th anniversary wedding, somebody says for very special occasions.
I see. Were there some other kind of traditions that were part of the lace making? Like, were there any ideas about bad luck in lace making?
No. Okay. Just the contrary. You keep it like a heirloom.
Yeah.
And sometimes they go from family to family. You know, they run in the family. They keep it in the family. It was a tradition to keep the pieces in the lace. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody wears this lace in the wedding, and maybe they put that lace in the dress when the daughter was 50 years old. They had a big party.
Oh, I see.
So you know, that is a tradition. They can use the same lace. They can adapt it to the different cloths. Maybe a wedding, they have it around the neck like this, you know, and then the girl will have it in the skirt like this, you know, they can make the same lace just in the different ways.
I see.
But it's the same piece that has been going on in the family, running and keeping it in the family.
Yeah, okay. I'm kind of also interested in the lace making, the community that you've done. You've taught a number of people to do lace, right? You teach classes?
Yes, I did in Mississippi. And here in Jacksonville, not so much, but I also teach in the conventions.
Oh.
And I have a class of Brussels laces in Dallas, Texas, August the 8th.
Oh, okay.
I'm teaching that people from all the United States.
Oh, great.
So I have a workshop in the International All Laces Convention.
Oh, terrific.
That this year is going to be in Dallas, Texas, the 8th of August. Hmm. I start until the 30th.
Mm-hmm. Are there very many other lace makers here in Jacksonville?
Yes, we have a chapter for the international. We have about 10 people, but not all know how to make lace. The chapters is people that know how to make lace and people who are interested and collect laces.
Oh.
Lace makers really here in Jacksonville, they are, that I know, one more person that really knows how to make lace.
Mm.
But in the chapter, we have people that know little things, you know, I mean, little samples and things like that. And they are very enthusiastic and they love lace, but we meet every month and we have we read slides from the chapter and we run slices to learn more and more.